always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
It's Friday!
I'm still chuckling about that conversation with Jay Ashcroft a little bit ago.
Yeah.
So Jay and I are about the same age, right?
Mm.
And his dad, of course, you know him as the U.S. Senator and the Attorney General and the Governor and everything. But his dad was also a very, very conservative minister.
Right.
John Ashcroft. Mm. And my dad was a very, very conservative, strict Baptist minister as well. So Jay knew exactly what I was talking about. We're talking about hiding your mixtapes because we weren't allowed to listen to the rock and roll on there. And you notice, like, even at our age in our 50s, he was like, yeah, I'm talking about something else. I don't know. My dad might be listening.
Let me segue to the Southern gospel roots here.
And he picked out Charlie Daniels, a band that could go both country and rock and roll.
That's right. That was exactly. So after a minute, I'm like, ooh, I was going to like make the joke about that. I'm like, ooh, I think he's like, Ted might be listening.
It's like, I actually was studying when I went to the library.
Jay probably was.
Yeah, that's true.
I was not. All right, it's 8:06 right now.
What's a library?
Yeah. Okay. This Flashback Friday. Gabe Sirstel's here. So's Danny Devine.
Yeah. Hi. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Nice to join you, gentlemen, again. And so I was running a little bit late this morning because I had to stop and get my Starbucks. I was looking and I'm like, you know what? World War III is popping off in the Middle East. I'll be damned if I'm going to start my day with a gas station coffee. So I sat in line for an extra 10 minutes. And I know Starbucks, you know, say what you want about them, but they make pretty good coffee, I got to be honest.
Caldi's is better. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
They did ask me for a tip, though.
The coffee wars.
Yeah. I got a black coffee here, one shot of espresso. It cost me about $7.
Oh, my gosh.
And then the poor kid at the counter, because you could tell he's embarrassed by it. He flips the iPad around. He's like, oh, there's a couple questions you got to answer before you check out. It's like, do you want to leave a tip? Oh, I'd love to leave a 40% tip for your coffee pouring experience.
Yeah, where gravity does the work for you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I saw another one of those tipping culture stories the other day. It was at an airport where somebody, apparently their luggage was like half a pound over, and I don't remember which airline it was, and the person there working for the airline goes, hey, for a nice tip, I can, you know, not notice that and just put it in there. And they laughed and they sent the luggage back, and the guy said, were you serious? And they go, yeah, here's where you put the tip. And so he ended up tipping the airline employee there for allowing the luggage to go through, even though it was a half a pound over.
You know, my wife has a standard line that she always uses. You want a tip? Plant your corn early.
Yes.
There's my tip for the day.
Buy low, sell high.
Yes, buy low, yeah, exactly. Well, those are the tips I give.
The airport situation, I mean, I could see that. I would throw a guy, you know, an extra $5, $10 bill under the table just so I don't get penalized for the luggage situation. Although that I never, I'm like always 20 pounds under. I pack light. That had to be a woman who had the although a half a pound over, usually it's about 10 pounds over. My girlfriend, whenever we go out anywhere, it could be for a weekend trip, it's like she's got to pack 60, 70 pounds worth of luggage. I'm like, we're going to a beach. You don't need much clothes.
You're literally wearing as few clothes as you can. I mean, like when I went down to Fort Myers to play in that baseball tournament, one of my pieces of luggage was literally my equipment bag. I'm the catcher. And it was still under 50 pounds.
I really don't know how some of these women do it. And I'm generalizing here. I'm sure there's men out there that are a little bit extra that need to pack, you know, everything in sight. But
it's the multiple pairs of shoes and the hair equipment.
Is that what it is?
I think that's what it is. because you've got extra 15 pounds of electronics and high heat ceramics. So I think that's what's happening there.
Okay. So you mentioned, let's go over some of the news. I'll get your reaction to some of this, Danny. We mentioned earlier this morning, Israel responds to Iran. Now, first of all, there's the horrific dishonest reporting we're seeing in the media everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, Israel's war against, okay, well, first of all, Israel is fighting a defensive war after being attacked, but there they're saying, you know, Israel has launched an attack on Iran. Well, they're responding to Iran launching an attack on them.
Right.
Iran says, but you attacked, you know, some of our generals. And Israel's like, yeah, because you dropped missiles and drone, you know. And so it's escalating over and over and over again. But one of the interesting things is that Iran apparently did not give the Biden administration a heads up, which tells me they're losing faith and trust in the administration.
Israel did not.
And which tells me that they're losing faith and trust, not just in the Biden administration, but from the rest of the world's perspective. They don't differentiate between Republican and Democratic presidents or Congresses. They just look at the country. And so, you know, Israel could be looking at the U.S. saying, we just don't know if we need to trust them with what we're going to do. That's a bad sign.
You know what this is like, Mike? This is like when Albert Pujols would round third base and Jose Oquendo's throwing his arms up, stop, don't go. Yeah. And he just blows right past the stop sign. That's Israel right now. No matter what the United States, Biden could say, hey, you know, we need to calm the situation down over there. Clearly, Israel's just blowing right through whatever Biden has to say, whatever this Biden regime has to say.
Well, Biden just says, don't.
Don't. I saw a meme the other day on Twitter, and it was like the FBI banging down some guy's door with a battering ram, and where the little slit is to the little slit to lock the door, there was a Cheeto there, and it just said "don't."
Yeah. in the battering ram was a run. Yes.
Clearly saying "don't" over and over and over again. You would think by like the 40 or 45th time saying "don't," you know, Iran would be scared off by Mr. Yeah. Biden, but clearly not. It's not working. Not an effective strategy.
Yeah. Well, similarly at the border, you know, where they say, "Well, don't come over." Well, you're actually by your policies, you're inviting them over.
You're saying please.
And Mayorkas, his impeachment vote, you know, that came through, and then they walked it over to the Senate, and the Senate immediately round filed it. What do you make of that?
Wouldn't even look at it. So I thought the whole impeachment on Mayorkas, it was, we knew that the Senate would not, most likely not even hear it, let alone push it through. So it was more just political theater, I think. We've kind of cheapened, and don't get me wrong, Mayorkas, I mean, there's plenty of evidence, there's plenty of reasons out there why he should be removed. He's horrendous. The southern border is in the worst shape it's ever been. But this whole impeachment thing, and I think people are getting a little burnt out about how we throw impeachment around all willy-nilly nowadays. And it's like, do these people up in Washington, D.C., do they have anything better to do than just like go to work for the American people? How about we start with that? But yeah, Mayorkas, I thought that the Senate not even entertaining it just shows you all you needed to know.
Yeah, I mean, we knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, we knew that was going to happen. So it was really just a giant waste of time. Again, it was more for the optics than anything else. And it's like, yeah, I think the guy should be removed immediately, but we all knew it wasn't going to go through, so what's the point?
Okay, so let me follow up on something you just said, because we've made this argument here before, and you can go back to the Trump years, and even before that, remember, there's been threats of impeachment against everybody, but nobody would actually pull the trigger on it, because that is such a massive constitutional
It's a massive deal.
The biggest thing. It's for the worst case scenario.
Right.
And Chuck Schumer was whining about saying, you know, I've always said that we shouldn't use impeachments just to settle policy differences. And we're going, you just now discovered that? Because that wasn't your take a few years ago on this as well. And like Donald Trump or don't like Donald Trump, it's really hard to make the case that you could throw rushed impeachments at him over and over again. And so now the bar is set to where it says, I don't like what you're doing, I'm going to impeach you.
Exactly. Now it's this never ending loop of this impeachment, just political theater type stuff. Mm-hmm. And I said this, Mike, during Trump's first administration, it was, imagine, because the guy moved mountains with all the guns pointed towards his head, all the pressure from the media, from the establishment in Washington, D.C., and then these impeachment trials that they kept throwing at, these impeachment inquiries that they kept throwing at him. Imagine what he could have done if it wasn't for all that. He already accomplished a ton. His resume from the first administration, from the first term, is incredible when you really look at it. But imagine if there were no distractions and all these sham, these trials, these witch hunts, things like that, how much more could have been accomplished? That's the really sad part of it, because it could have been so much even better.
Is there any going back? Can we
That's a good question.
Put the genie back in the bottle? Can we put the toothpaste back in the tube here? Or is it done?
We're going to have
campaign. Not until there's an overhaul, I think. Yeah. There's just too many people up in Washington, D.C. right now that don't have the American citizens' best interest in mind, that are more concerned with saving their career and their quote-unquote legacy there in Washington, D.C. And they're just establishment politicians. They've been up there for decades. And until those people are out, and there's a new wave of people that genuinely care about the American people up there, then I think it's just going to keep going on and on.
Someday the history books are going to rate presidents by their records on impeachment. Like, they were 2-3.
Under 500. Under 500. Oh
my God. Well, Trump's undefeated. He's 2-0. So he's like the Floyd Mayweather of impeachments.
Yeah. Okay, real quick here. So Columbia University in New York City yesterday, a bunch of the pro-Palestine, pro-Hamas, anti-Israeli protesters decided they were going to go the old school Chaz Chop Occupy, set up an encampment protest. We're going to take over. We're going to make them meet our demands. And the president of the university, the mayor, and the police department in a deep blue city said no, and they hauled off and physically removed and arrested over 100 of these college students. And now the university says every single one of those students has been suspended from Columbia on this. So has the young extremist leftist protesters, are they tipping the scale, overplaying their hand and going too far finally, even for the left?
I think so. And this is something I've been saying for years, is that these people on the left, these radicals that will just keep going and going and going. You give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. And they've gone so far left off the rails that now even middle of the road people, slightly left leaning people, are realizing, hey, this is not the group that I want to be associated with. Mm-hmm. These people have hijacked our party. I was looking, what was that, Tuesday or Monday this week, where they had the pro-Palestinian protest all over America. Golden Gate Bridge was locked down for 4 hours, New York City. And your right to assemble, your right to protest is protected under the First Amendment. But when you're actually blocking traffic for 4 hours, not allowing people to get to whatever it may be, work, a doctor's appointment, maybe there's a pregnant woman in there that needs to get to the ER immediately to get
emergency vehicles.
Yeah. To go home because you got to, go number two. Who knows? I really don't care.
That counts as an emergency.
That's an emergency. Exactly. At least that's what I tell the police officer while I'm speeding.
You drive a Tesla. Or Prius. You have a Tesla. You don't speed.
Oh, here we go back to the whole Prius thing. Come on, Mike. I'm trying to stay focused. these protesters, and it's incredible. I have actually a guest coming on the show this weekend who is from the area. Great guy. He's built a lot of great companies here in St. Louis, but he's Jewish. And he told me, I don't know if I mentioned this on the last time I was here, but he never voted Republican in his life. He voted, I believe, for Bernie Sanders in the 2016 primary, did not vote in 2020. But he told me, and this was several months ago before, and it's only gotten worse against Jewish people here in America since then. He said, you know what? I've never voted Republican. I didn't vote for Trump the first time, the second time, but he'll be getting my vote in this upcoming election. And that's just where a lot of people, I think, are gravitating towards, especially in the Jewish community, which has always voted Democrat. I'm not saying that Trump's going to win that voter block in November, but you see this just blatant anti-Semitism on campus. And it's incredible to see. It's like, where did these people come from that are just the violent protesters? Mm-hmm. I mean, burning American flags, which again, hate it or love it, it is protected under the First Amendment. But I see a lot of the people out there during these protests, and they got the purple hair. I saw several people that were just morbidly obese outside wearing a mask on. It's like, what? make this make sense.
Oh no.
You know, it's like, what rock did a lot of these people crawl out from underneath? And the ironic thing is here is that they seem to hate this country so much. But if you went over to the Middle East and some of these other countries, they're just so sheltered. They're so incubated here in America that they don't know what real life looks like. They have zero worldly knowledge. These people, like I said, they're out in the middle of the day. A, shouldn't you be working, first of all?
Or going to school.
But second, you're outside, you're wearing a mask, you probably have 15 different pronouns that you identify as, and you're burning the American flag, you're burning the Israeli flag, and it's just... Go try that somewhere else. And I know a lot of people argue, well, that's what makes America great, the freedom of speech, freedom of expression. I get that. But I just feel like a lot of these protesters are just, they're so just oblivious to what's going on in the world right now. And it's ridiculous.
Yeah, take your trust fund over there, like you said, and see how that works out for you. And it's really weird. I mean, I know this is a little bit off of a sidebar, but I looked at a bunch of the pictures of that encampment they tried to set up. I'm like, why do they all have that look?
And
you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. It's that look. Yeah. Yeah.
It's that leftist academy look.
I mean, that image you have in your head now is it. And we all have the same image.
It's so true.
Oh my goodness. All right. You got a few minutes to hang out?
Oh, I'd love to hang out.
Okay. Yes. Let's do that. Let's dump some news on people here at just ahead here, right around 8:21. Get your thoughts on that as well. Because that protest, I mean, I am actually glad to see there's some pushback and saying, no, you're not allowed to commandeer other people's property or lives. You know, that's not free speech. Besides, they were on a bridge. Just throw them off.
There's right. Water down there.
314-912-1019.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. We'll make heaven a place.
Little Belinda Carlisle.
Heaven's on earth.
Yeah. Heaven is a place on earth.
Yeah.
Her post-Go-Go's career. She was really big in the 80s there for a while. Her, Jane Wedlin, had a good career from the Go-Go's as well. But this was like pop gold back in my high school years.
It reminds me of like Breakfast Club.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, what a magical time to be alive.
Seriously.
A lot of great conversation happening on the Rumble chat box right now. So get in, jump on in there. A lot of people talking about the protest of the kids and the encampments. Let's just say that this movement has worn out its welcome. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Danny DeFine in the studio with us from Next Gen Show. What can we look forward to this weekend?
So this weekend, like I mentioned earlier, I have a great guest on from the area. He has invested in a lot of different real estate properties. Comes from a very interesting background. It'll bring a unique perspective. He's a kind of a big time player here in St. Louis, very well known. So he will be offering his perspective on he's Jewish and gay. So that'll be an interesting perspective, yeah, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he'll be talking about just what it means to him, St. Louis, and how he's born and raised here. So how he has seen the city just kind of degrade over the last several years, and what we can do to get this thing back on track. And I have a lot of a lot of good friends here in the area that have built businesses and that are doing some remarkable things here in St. Louis. And I think it's going to be that next generation of leadership to really step up and get this thing back on the right track. And my guest, his name's Josh Gould. He'll be on the show this Sunday. Very interesting. Good head on his shoulders, and it'll bring a very unique perspective to what's going on.
So Sunday night, 10 o'clock.
Sunday night, 10 o'clock. Yep. Next show.
The Morning News Dump.
Are you joking? Is this a joke?
Listen, folks. The Morning News Dump.
All right, here's what's going on around the area. By the way, here in about 10 minutes or so, we're going to talk to one of the Battle Hawks themselves. Man, I'm looking forward to this. Carson Wells, linebacker, man, number 26. He's got to be salivating, getting ready to play Memphis because they have a tendency to let their quarterback get sacked. All right, but here's what's happening around St. Louis. Daniel Riley learns his fate, and it's almost two decades behind bars. Riley, of course, was convicted last month of multiple charges related to the car crash that cost Janae Edmondson her legs. During the hearings, Janae's mother, Francine Edmondson, addressed the court. This is part of what she had to say.
He sentenced Janae on that street that night to be an amputee for the rest of her life. The sentence he was given will never be enough to repay for what she had taken from her and from our family.
Okay, now Daniel Riley, I mean, this has got to be one of the most arrogant defendants I've ever heard or seen in my life. He was offered a plea deal that would have given him a couple years less, rejected it, wanted to roll the dice in court, ended up with 19 years instead of 17 years, asked for a new trial, that was denied. Now he's going to spend almost 20 years behind bars.
I think they could have done more. With this. I think part of the thing is that they decided that he would spend the sentences for his multiple infractions concurrently rather than consecutively. I think that's one of the reasons why it turned out to be that 18, 17, 18 year region as opposed to the longer sentence, which I think they could have get it.
Yeah, I mean, they could have charged higher and more. But the bottom line is that the city now, of course, still has the lawsuit against it from the Edmondson family. Mm-hmm. And that's going to go to court in next March as well, which, by the way, is right before the local elections St. Louis as well. Wow. So that could have an impact there as well. Mm-hmm.
And this guy had quite the rap sheet, too, right? Oh, yeah. And then that's on Kim Gardner's watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he so it should have never been out in the first place.
Exactly.
Well, it was documented that he violated the terms of his, parole literally over 100 times because mm-hmm. they could track the thing on his ankle and they knew that, I mean, it was just insane that he was still out anywhere and he didn't have a license. And I mean, it was just over and over and over again. It's just absolute incompetence again by St. Louis city government.
See, just things like that, though, you look at St. Louis and where we've gone the last 15, 20, 30 years, and it seems like, oh, this is just a insurmountable thing to climb this mountain and get mm-hmm. St. Louis back on track. But it's just common sense. Like, look, fixes like that, keeping people like that off the streets and cleaning up the crime is obviously the number one thing here in the city of St. Louis. And it's so frustrating, too, because there's so much potential. And it's just like things like this. How does this happen?
Yeah. All right. School choice expansion is headed to the governor's desk on the Missouri side with the bare minimum number mm-hmm. of votes needed. Missouri House passes the plan to expand tax credit scholarships. Also, it will allow charter schools in Boone County. It is expected the Governor Parson will sign it into law. The bill also increases funding for public schools. That was a compromise with Democrats who mostly voted against the bill anyway. So that is off the table. Still a lot of hard feelings within the conservative movement on it, but the school choice expansion is going to the governor's desk.
Finally, we get something.
Yeah, right? A little something, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the tax credit scholarship expansion. You know, that's a very, very good thing. Are there warts on the bill? Yep.
Oh, gosh, it's very warty.
Yeah, but, overall, it's like good or bad. There's more good than bad. If you want to hear a conversation with Camelia Peterson from Americans for Prosperity, we talked to her earlier today. That's going to be up on the News Talk STL podcast a little bit later on today, probably within the next few hours. Okay, Cardinals start a home series against the Brewers in a division matchup tonight. Kyle Gibson's going to start on the mound for the Redbirds. 7:15 first pitch at Busch Stadium for that. Cardinals are hoping to get back to .500 with a win tonight. They are 9-10 right now. I know people are saying, yeah, they're in last place in the division, but it's really a competitive division. There's not that much of a difference between first and last place. Cardinals have not had a super series or super season so far, but they haven't had a terrible one like a lot of people are saying. They've been competitive, won a number of series. Really, it's not been as bad as we thought it was going to be, and the Cardinals are showing some promise. We just need Sonny Gray to apparently throw every single game.
Apparently so.
Can we bring Chris Carpenter out of retirement?
Yeah.
Is he still around?
Jose Oquendo, bring him up here, have him throw.
Yeah. Hey, might as well. We're bringing everybody else back.
Oh, I'm just being told that Sonny Gray's orthopedic surgeon says he's not allowed to throw every single game.
Oh. So,
thanks a lot, Doc. All right, just ahead here, Battlehawks, man, they are on national TV tomorrow morning, and we've got linebacker Carson Wells with us at 8:35 playing the Memphis Life Refs at the Dome. We'll talk about that with him at 8:34.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Little ZZ Top on your Flashback Friday.
You're welcome, honey.
That's
my request.
That was Janet's request.
Oh, no wonder you married her. She's got good taste in music.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
And she's got great legs.
Oh, Gabriel. Oh. I'm clutching my pearls. This is a family-oriented morning show.
Yes. Marital bliss is important to family formation.
Does she identify as a she, her?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's
okay.
A lot of sheep.
Carson's listing on Carson from the Battlehawks is listing going, what the hell did I just get myself into? All right, so here's what's happening. The Battlehawks have the UFL's early game this weekend. They host the Memphis Showboats at the Dome, of course. 11:30 kickoff. Now, this is on ABC, the national broadcast on ABC. Battlehawks coach hoping you don't watch it on TV, hoping that you go to the stadium, set another attendance record. Battlehawks, by the way, tied for first in the XFL conference with a 2-1 record. Second most points scored in the league so far after 3 weeks. The pontoons are 1-2 on the season as they're coming in as well. Now we're joined
the
by
pontoons.
Oh yeah, showboats. I'm sorry, showboats.
You've used every nautical term you can.
Number 26 is Carson Wells, linebacker for the Battle Hawks, who joins us right now. And Carson, first of all, man, appreciate you being on the show. Secondly, you're a linebacker. The Memphis Showboats gave up 8 sacks last week alone. From a linebacker's perspective, are you already lobbying for more blitz plays to be called so you can plant a quarterback?
Yeah, I appreciate y'all having me on. And, yeah, no doubt. I mean, when it comes to a team like that, you want to get on them early and just not give them a chance to breathe.
Good morning, Carson. Gabe Pfeiffer here. So what I'm hoping to see on Saturday is some defensive points off the turnover. I'm really looking for somebody to grab that INT and take it all the way to the house. What are you thinking in terms of anticipating the types of plays you're going to be able to have those opportunities?
Yeah, because they actually had to do a quarterback switch last week, so mm-hmm. they that's not been their strongest point, is putting in the air.
That's actually been a point of emphasis for us for the last 2 years since the XFL came back last year and the UFL this year. We actually haven't scored as a defense. So we gotta put a reward system out for that. So we've definitely made it a point of emphasis.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're visiting with Carson Wells, linebacker for this, the St. Louis Battlehawks here. Okay, so it just seems like just the last couple of weeks that you all and the Battlehawks have really kind of gelled and settled in, because that's one of the unique things with the XFL is you don't know what the roster is going to look like from year to year. And as the XFL, you know, continues to grow, people will settle in more. But what's it feel like, you know, on the field, in the locker room, when it comes to playing with guys that, you know, you just started playing with and you don't have that 2-3-4 year history of being teammates? You've got, you know, a one season or half a season with it. I mean, how's that coming together?
I think we actually had a huge advantage with St. Louis staying together through the merger. I think we probably had 25 or 30 guys still on the team from last year. That was a huge advantage coming out through training camp year two in the system for a bunch of guys. I think that's why we've been gelling early in the season.
Hey, good morning, Carson. Stal Ponticus here. So as a linebacker, who were some of the players you followed and enjoyed watching as a kid?
So I grew up in Florida. Both my parents went to the University of Florida. And then a kid from my high school named Earl Everett, he played linebacker at the University of Florida. Mm-hmm. And that national championship in 06. He was the guy that tackled Troy Smith without his helmet on. I don't know if y'all remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And then he was my coach in high school too, actually.
Oh, he was
somebody I watched a lot.
All right, when you're watching the game tomorrow, whether you're at the Dome or whether you're watching on ABC, you want to watch for number 26. That's Carson Wells, and that's who we're talking about, talking to right now, not about, talking with right now. Okay, when you look at the game plan coming in right here, I mean, obviously, home field, it's going to be noisy in there. Memphis or anybody else, they're not used to the crowds that St. Louis gets, and I'll ask you about that here in just a second. But this is kind of a crucial game. We're not quite halfway through the season. 2-1 on the year. You know, tied for first in the division. A win here really puts you in a great position as things start to shape up for playoffs.
No doubt. Everybody's trying to figure out who they are right now. We're trying to set our identity. We need to come in early, try to stop the run, and like y'all said, get after the quarterback. Early with a 10-game season, all the games matter. You can't just we'll turn it on later in the year and get ready for the playoff push. Every game matters in a 10-game season. So we know the importance of these.
Hey, Carson, Danny Define here. Good morning. I wanted to know how A.J. McCarron and his leadership, how does that translate in the locker room? Obviously, he was on some great teams there in Alabama, won a national title. But what does it mean to have him leading this group here at the Battlehawks?
It's great. I mean, he takes full control of the offense. If something goes wrong in practice, miss a block or routes messed up, you don't have to wait for a coach to rewrite the play or get on somebody. He takes full control of that and gets everybody where they need to be when they need to be there.
Yeah, and that's got to say something to the team, Carson, that he chose, he asked for his release from an NFL team to come back specifically to St. Louis and this team with the Battle Hawks. That's got to mean a lot to the guys in the locker room, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good teams are led by coaches, great teams are led by players, and he's one of the best best leaders I can think of out there to follow.
Well, we saw another record-breaking crowd to gather in the Dome last week. Are you anticipating another 40,000-plus people screaming and wearing their blue and giving their best caw?
I mean, no doubt. I mean, that's a huge advantage for us. We feed off of that. That gets us going. I mean, we've lost, one game at home over the last two seasons? Mm-hmm. That's hard to beat. It's hard to beat that in college.
Yeah, and last week you literally outdrew the St. Louis Cardinals on the same day.
Yeah.
Is there a Cardinals game this weekend?
There is. It's they start at 1:15, so everybody can go check out the Battle Hawks, and they can go to Ballpark Village right after to celebrate the win if they want.
Yeah, there's a game, but it's not the game.
Right.
The Battle Hawks,
that's the game.
Yeah, but I mean, Carson, but along those lines, I mean, last week the Battle Hawks had 2/3 of the attendance for the entire week in the league. That week, I mean, 40,317.
40,
and other teams were getting 3,000, 5,000, 7,000. I still think the UFL can succeed and grow and become a really good overall league. But if that happens, it's because of what the market is doing here, what your team, the Battle Hawks, is doing here, and what the fans are doing here. And so, tell me a little bit about what it's like. You've been on the road. You went and played the Michigan Kittens the first week early on, and then, of course, got the win last week. But when you go on the road and see that they're excited about 5,000, 7,000, 10,000 people maybe showing up, and then get here and the other teams roll out to 40,000-some people, that's got to change the dynamics. What's the reaction to the players knowing that that's the kind of support you're going to get?
I saw last week the total attendance across the whole league was like 39,000. I mean, we had that in one game. But the offense has definitely got to change up when they come to St. Louis. They can't be a verbal cadence. Everything has to be nonverbal on the clap. Makes communication a lot harder. Makes our job a lot easier in terms of getting after the quarterback. They got to over-communicate, know where the slide protection's going. Quarterback guy has to know where the hot routes are. Everybody has to be on the same page, and the 40,000 just makes everything 10 times harder.
Okay, just got a minute or so left here. We're visiting with Carson Wells, a linebacker for the St. Louis Battlehawks. When you look at the pregame broadcast and everything, they're always like, okay, here are the main points to watch for, game keys to the game or whatever the case is. So you're playing the Canoes tomorrow. What's the game plan? What are the top things that you have to, that the keys to the game that we should be watching for? I mean, let's start with where you are on defense, because obviously with you in that key linebacker position right there, what are the things that we should be watching for to know that, yep, you got the upper hand and you're taking control of the game?
First things first, you got to stop the run, let AJ and that offense get rolling, and then get after the quarterback. That's three steps to the victory.
All right, Carson Wells, St. Louis Battle Hawks. The game's on ABC. Kickoff is at 11:30. I'm not sure when the coverage starts, probably around 11 or so. But get out to the Dome, man. I mean, get out there. Let's continue to we are the sugar daddy of the entire UFL right now.
Yes.
Let's be honest. Because we're showing up, but the Battle Hawks are delivering, man. So, Carson, great to chat with you, man. Thanks for being on.
Thanks, Carson.
Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all for having me.
Yeah, you got it.
Thanks, Carson.
By the way, quick trivia thing about here. Mm-hmm. Carson and his family actually own a cattle ranch, so he's actually a cowboy.
He's a literal cowboy.
He's a literal cowboy.
So go out there and beat those life rafts.
That's right.
Pontoons. What a weird name that is.
The Memphis dinghies.
All right. It is April 19th, which means tomorrow, by my public school math, is that tomorrow is 4:20.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know anybody who's going to be celebrating? I know people who are going to be celebrating this holiday. I'm just telling you.
Smoke is thick in the air.
It will be. I was at the Dome once when the smoke was thick in the air, but that was a Guns N' Roses concert.
Oh, okay. That was pyrotechnics.
Even Axl Rose went, I'm assuming you all have your medical cards, right? Yeah.
I wonder where the Doobie Brothers are playing tomorrow.
Yeah, really?
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. All right. That's still ahead here. We've got Danny Devine in studio with us here on 101.9 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Everyone's watching
to see what you do. I got to just mention, it's completely coincidence that our boss's birthday is tomorrow and it's 420 tomorrow.
Yeah.
There's no relation there. Because literally, if there's anybody like the single last person I would ever picture.
Oh, my gosh.
That's Jeff.
Yes. Second to my dad.
I actually know people that probably are going to treat tomorrow like a holiday.
Like a real holiday.
Like literally are going to celebrate 420.
Speaking of Jeff and his birthday, is this a little foreshadowing? Are you going to get him some Chippendale dancers?
No.
This reminds me of Chris Farley and Patrick Swayze.
Oh, yeah.
On SNL.
Oh, I forgot about
Barney,
that.
Barney and Adrian.
No, here's how we celebrate News Talk style is I think tacos are coming in.
Yeah,
today.
It's Taco Tuesday.
Okay.
Taco Day. But 420, it's kind of funny because this becomes a thing. Of course, then again, the same people are going to celebrate this tomorrow like a holiday have been celebrating legalization nonstop since it became legal.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So every morning.
And matter of fact, remember, tomorrow is a palindrome as well.
Oh, 4/20/24.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Matter of fact, there's some people talking about
Gabe,
this.
Gabe, can you explain what that means? You're a rocket scientist.
Well, it's the same way this way as it is that way.
Yeah. Oh,
from forwards and backwards, yeah.
Like, matter of fact, there are some people talking about this like right out there. They're like imbibing. All right, here's what. Let's go check in with them real quick. Hey, guys.
Legal pot sales could hit an all-time high.
I had a pot gummy bear the other day. There's a difference between smoking it and eating it. When you eat it, it lets you talk to dolphins.
I can see the air.
That was actually not the one I wanted to play. And no, I have not been celebrating myself here.
I can see the air.
Yes.
It's incredible. You know, I've grown up in this pot revolution and I've seen the changes in the public perception over the last 10 years. And, you know, high school, you had to drive 50 miles into the woods just to smoke out of an apple. And now you have kids walking in Target and your flannels and slippers just hitting the vape pen while they're doing some shopping. It's incredible to see how this has evolved over the last 10-15 years.
We were just talking about that, and yeah, it's like a lot of things, like a lot of cultural norms have changed pretty dramatically over just the last 10 years, let alone the last 20 years. You know, it's like, because I was coming up as a kid, you know, 80s, 90s kids. So looking at the difference between my upbringing and let's say my daughter's upbringing or now, you know, my nieces and nephews, their upbringing, my goodness, it's a different world entirely.
Yeah, it is. And I've always been, I'm pro pot. I don't think it should be a criminal offense. I don't mind it being legalized at the recreational level. But having said that, I also feel like the accessibility and when you're talking about kids in high school, vaping and things like that, just like anything else, you need to handle it responsibly. And I don't think anybody under the age of 21, when your brain is still developing, that cannot be good to be 14 years old smoking weed all the time.
I know some 40 year olds whose brains are still developing in college.
That's true.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.